Nerigiri, Kawarasoba, Chanko, TKG, Agepan, and so much more top the list of things that you absolutely must try when you come to Japan. That is right. Today we are talking about food. It is an episode that is long overdue. So without any further wait, let's roll that music and get this episode started. Welcome to the Tokyo Lens Podcast, and as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. Really glad to have you guys here today. As I said, this is a long overdue episode today. Today we're talking about food. Some of these foods are going to be super common, and you're going to be like, hey, I know that one, and some are going to be a little less common. Maybe even the first time hearing or learning about them. The big challenge about doing a food episode, especially when it comes to Japan, is very often a lot of these are beautifully, beautifully presented. So if it is an option for you, I highly encourage you to have your phone, tablet, PC nearby so that you can Google and take a peek at some of these, or at least take notes so that you can take a look later. If that is not an option, then just come back to the episode when you have time and pick out your favorite ones. I will do my best along the way to describe them the best I can. We're going to start with what I'd probably say is one of my favorite Japanese sweets of all time. And it's one that you've almost definitely seen. We're going to take a walk over to the realm of traditional Japanese sweets called wagashi. Now, if you've never heard of wagashi, wagashi are basically just exactly that. Traditional Japanese sweets, more often than not, made in a very traditional way. Topping that list is something called nerikiri. Now, nerikiri are both incredibly easy and incredibly difficult to describe all at the same time. You've definitely seen them if you've ever seen any picture of Japanese traditional sweets. More often than not, they will take the form of gorgeously designed little flowers, or they'll have like a little ball shape. They almost look like little cakes. More often than not, very colorful. They come in all different colors, pinks and reds, blues and greens, oranges and yellows, and very often have a pastel color look to them. You may have even seen some of your favorite creators making them and just never known what they were called. I was introduced to these, I'd say, the better part of 10 years ago when a friend had me pick some up for their grandfather. And along the way, I thought, why not grab an extra one for myself? And instantly fell in love. They are sweet. They may not be sweet in the sense that you're expecting. They're not sweet like a chocolate or like a cake. They're a very soft and delicate sweetness to them. And if you've ever had anko or red bean paste, the base of nerikiri is made, I believe, almost 90% or more out of anko. Or more specifically, a paste called shiroan. It's kind of like a white rice. Oh, Lord. So kind of like a white bean paste. I believe this is mixed with gyuhi, or the Japanese kind of rice paste, if you will, and really serves to represent the category of wagashi as is. In fact, you know, just for good measure, I'm going to go into my phone right now and type in wagashi. And yep, there it is. The second that I type in wagashi, you come up with tons of pictures of these nerikiri right out of the gate. Now, obviously, these aren't the only wagashi available, but they definitely do top the charts. And again, they're very visually appealing as well as absolutely delicious. And so I highly, highly recommend you checking these out. Now be careful, because the Wagashi world is... it's a world all of its own. And it's one of those ones that if you are into sweets and snacks and all of that, it is easy to get pulled down the rabbit hole into this. So we will move from the town of sweet over to the valley of savory as we talk about the next one, which is monja yaki. This one you may have heard of, you may have seen, you may even have tried. If you're familiar with okonomiyaki, which is very oddly described from time to time as like a Japanese pancake, but it's really not. I recently went out for okonomiyaki with a friend, and during that time, I asked, how would you describe this? How would you describe it? And they were like, kind of like an omelet, but it's not really like an omelet. It's more breaded, and it really is. It's got a mix of like breading and cabbage, and it's got eggs, and then you can put whatever you want in it. You can put meat and seafood, this, that, the next thing, and then it's fried to kind of look visually like a pancake. And then it is often topped with Japanese sauce, as well as bonito flakes, and a little bit of nori, some green seaweed. There's a whole bunch of ways that you can do it. And the reason I'm being so vague on how you can make it is because it's all up to you. You see, that's why it's called okonomiyaki. Okonomi means your preference, your choice, what you like. So okonomiyaki is exactly that. It is a mix of what you like and can have anything in it. For the longest time, I have a taiyaki maker in my house. And taiyaki are, if you've ever seen those little fish-shaped desserts that have the red bean paste inside them, those are taiyaki. And I have a taiyaki maker, and I would often make okonomiyaki taiyaki. Well, getting back to the main one that we were talking about before I sidebarred very hard into some other foods, monja yaki. Now, monja yaki is kind of in the same family as okonomiyaki. It is more often than not done right in front of you on a hot plate. It is poured out from a bowl, and you are given these tiny, tiny, tiny little, they kind of look like spatulas or flippers made out of metal, and you scrape off a bit and eat it. You scrape off a bit and eat it in tiny little mouthfuls. It doesn't come together to form a circle or shape or cake of any kind. You just kind of scoop it up and eat it right there. I've started with these two, the nerigiri and the monja yaki, because both of these are readily available in my favorite area of Asakusa in Tokyo. Asakusa is actually very well known for monja yaki and has one of the best wagashi shops in all of Tokyo. In fact, you know what? Let me just take a peek and put in Wagashi Asakusa and see if it comes up on the map. Oh, yes, it does. Okay. So some wagashi shops do come up right there on the maps. I'm going to leave it up for exploration and adventure for you. And monja, or monja yaki as it's known, also comes up along with that. So you can go out to Asakusa and definitely find yourself some monja yaki. You can definitely find yourself some nerigiri. Go out, grab a nerigiri, have some monja yaki for dinner, and enjoy your nerigiri afterwards. This is kind of our amuse-bouche, if you will, our appetizer to today's podcast episode. You see, I'd want to introduce things that I personally have had a great experience with, something that really added to my time here in Japan, much more than just a meal. There are the obvious things. Yes, you want to try ramen when you come here. There are so many great options. Yes, you want to try sushi. How could you come to Japan and not try sushi? All of this, of course, assuming that you don't have dietary restrictions. I am going to step sideways for a second and just say, for those of you who do have allergies or food restrictions, I just want to send some love your way. I hope that you can still find some enjoyment in the episode, but we're going to jump right forward to one of my personal favorites. It's called Kawara Soba, and this one comes with it a backstory. A backstory that leads back to my very first trip in Japan. I had traveled the country for pretty much 3 weeks at this point and landed in a small city at the bottom of the main island of Honshu called Shimonoseki. Now, this area is well known for fugu, or blowfish. In fact, you can go down to the morning fish market in Shimonoseki and get a fugu breakfast plate for a fraction of the price that you would pay for it pretty much anywhere else. It is quite spectacular, but fugu is surprisingly not on this list. We'll call this list one. There may be ones that follow. In all my time in Japan, I've never been so surprised and intrigued as I was the day I went over to a friend's house and they pulled out a roof tile and green soba noodles. They waited, they looked at me as if to challenge me with their eyes and see how I would react. I was obviously confused, intrigued, interested, and curious, and turned to them and said, "Well, what is all this for?" And they said, "We are going to cook these green soba noodles on top of this roof tile until they're crispy." I was intrigued by this, and I said, "Why? What is this?" And they said, "This is a local dish of Yamaguchi Prefecture called Kawara Soba." And as they prepared it, it only got more interesting. Just as they promised, they placed these green and rather thin soba noodles on top of this Japanese kawara roof tile. Now, these are the curved or slightly bent roof tiles that you'll see on a Japanese traditional home. And on top of that, they put lines of shredded scrambled egg, it looked like, and green onion, as well as a line of meat. They then put a little thing of sauce in front of me and dropped a lemon into it. And along with the lemon, a little bit of spicy daikon radish shredded up. At this point, my curiosity was higher than I think it has ever been for a single item of food. And they said, "What we do is we keep mixing up these green soba noodles until they are fried pretty much to a crisp here on the roof tile. Once they get crispy, you reach over with your chopsticks, you grab a single bite portion, you bring it over to your little cup of sauce, mix it up with your lemon and whatnot in there, and then eat it directly from the cup." And this was by far the single most unique meal I had had at the time, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I ended up going back to their place again and again and again just to have this Kawara Soba. And then obviously I left the area and settled here in Tokyo. And it wasn't until a good friend from the area said, "Don't you miss Kawara Soba?" that it just all came flowing back. And I was like, yes, I do more than anything. And he said, "Why don't we go out and get some?" I said, "Well, how are we going to do that? We are in Tokyo." And he said, "Well, you can get it in Tokyo. There is a restaurant in Tokyo called Fuku no Hana, FukuNoHana. And they sell Yamaguchi-based foods, including Kawara Soba, not to mention a lot of the other local dishes." A mini sidebar here to say that if you didn't know, each one of Japan's areas tends to have its own local foods, foods that that area or that spot is famous for. And it just so happens that Kawara Soba is one of those foods for Yamaguchi, but not the only one. Obviously, there is Fugu, but there are so many more. I highly recommend, if you are going to be traveling through Japan and you like food, to learn about the local foods in each area, why they're good, and what makes them special. Moving on to our next one. Our next one brings me back to my days of living in and around the area of Asakusa. This one, as I tell the story leading up to it, you may be like, ah, I know what's coming here, or you may be caught entirely off guard. But there is one thing about Asakusa that made it special and beautiful for me in a way that no other area of Tokyo has. And that is the Sumida River. You see, just down the road from where I lived, there's a big, beautiful river that connects all the way through the area of Arakawa, all the way down to Odaiba and beyond. It is a great place to walk. It is a great place to cycle. It is a great place to jog and just hang out. You can take boats down the river and so much more. And just down the river from Asakusa is Ryogoku. Now, when you say Ryogoku, you think sumo. Ryogoku is the area of the Ryogoku Kokugikan, the sumo stadium right there in Tokyo. And along with that comes sumo food. That is right. I am talking about chanko nabe. When a lot of people come to Japan, they think, oh, I want to try yakiniku or Korean barbecue, or I want to try sukiyaki, or I want to try nabe. And they overlook the most special nabe of all, in my opinion, and it is chanko nabe. It's often described as like a Japanese stew. It's made and consumed in vast quantities. And for sumo wrestlers, it is part of their weight gain protocol. It's often a dashi or chicken broth, and it is filled with all types of vegetables, meat, you name it. Again, it's another one that if you just take the time to Google and take a look at it, they're visually very beautiful, and it's just a really great dining experience. The area of Ryogoku has quite a few chanko nabe restaurants, and it is not entirely uncommon to actually run into sumo at or around one of these restaurants. Another great plus to living or spending time in that area is just the number of sumo that you get to see on a daily basis. Well, I wouldn't say daily. Let's step back a second and say weekly. Depending on where the tournament is being held, there are sumo just walking down the street or on their bicycle, doing their grocery shopping, you name it. They are all over the place, and it's just a great area to be. Now, since we are on the topic of nabe anyway, we're going to go directly into my favorite, which is shabu shabu. You probably know what shabu shabu is, and if you don't, it is basically a hot pot style meal where the pot keeps boiling in front of you, and whether it be your vegetables, your meat, whatever it is, you cook it right there in front. The meat is often sliced into super thin slices, but the trick with shabu shabu is to go for lunch. Shabu shabu is a food that is great pretty much no matter when you eat it. It is a hot meal, but you can enjoy it in the summer, you can enjoy it in the winter, daytime, nighttime, you name it. But in my personal opinion, there is a trick to truly enjoying shabu shabu. It's a two-step trick. Number one, go for lunch. You will get a lot more bang for your buck out of a meal like this going for lunch. More often than not, this will actually just turn into a pro tip sidebar here. A lot of Japanese restaurants have much cheaper lunch options than they do dinner options. Places that will have $30, $40, $50, $100, $200 dinners will have lunches for as low as $10 to $30. A great example of this is Japan's super expensive Korean barbecue or yakiniku restaurant called Jojoen. Jojoen is the type of place where a single person going there and eating to be full is looking at least $150 to $400 just for a night. You'll get a plate of meat that has maybe 4-5 slices of meat on it for as much as $10, $20, $30, $40 for a single plate. This exact same restaurant, you can go for lunch and get a lunch bento for as low as $16, $17 at the time of recording, or you can get a lunch yakiniku set for as much as $28 to, I think, $35. The area of Ebi's Garden Place Tower, the 38th and 39th floor that houses some of my favorite lunch restaurants, has a Jojo Inn in it. It's got a spectacular view. If you go, though, because it is on the far side of the building that faces Mount Fuji, I highly recommend hitting it up for an early lunch, like 11:30, because around 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. and on, the sun is coming directly in through the window and can be very bright and intrusive. But back to our topic of shabu shabu. So step one is enjoy it at lunch. Step two is find one specific restaurant. This restaurant is called Tajimaya. This particular restaurant has branches spread all throughout Tokyo. Some of my favorites are in the Yodobashi building in Akihabara or in the Rocks Shopping Center in Asakusa. But one of the things that makes this place great is all of the vegetables, as well as the desserts, ice cream, etc., are all you can eat. And you don't have to order an all-you-can-eat meat meal to go along with this. You can simply order one of these small, I think it's 150-gram pork, and it's like 800, 900 yen at the time of recording. And then for that meal, you get all of the extras that come along with it. This includes rice and curry. So more often than not, to go out and enjoy a really well-balanced meal, I will grab the, you know, pork or beef for somewhere around 1,000 yen or $10. And from there, I will jump in and grab myself some curry. I'll get lots of vegetables. At the end, they have ice cream. Now, keep in mind, even though it is a chain, each restaurant or each branch of this chain actually kind of handles it a little bit different. Some of them, it is all-inclusive. Some of them, dessert and whatnot is extra. It changes up from place to place. But shabu shabu is an absolute must. Just because of the variety of things you get to eat. You get that nabe feeling and experience. You get to try some Japanese curry along with it. There's soft drinks. There's ice cream. It's all there. It's all right there. And if you find the right location for around 1,000 yen, you can end up with a very full belly. So if you are on a budget and looking to only do one major meal in the day, I would highly recommend making it shabu shabu, especially at Tajimaya for lunch. That being said, we're going to go on to next one. Actually, I think the next two are fairly standard. They're just definite personal favorites that I feel like you really have to try when you come to Japan. The first out of this is katsudon. Katsu is fried pork cutlets, and don, or donburi, is a meal on a bowl of rice. There's no shortage of places to get katsudon, and many of the places will have their own little version of it, or, you know, they'll have a thicker or thinner cutlet, or they might even be a chain. There is a chain called Katsuya. And along with katsudon, there is a meal which is terribly, terribly named oyakodon. And oyako means parent and child. And oyakodon is quite literally a bowl of rice with chicken and egg on top of it. The chicken and egg are cooked together. They're in parent and child on the bowl. It is such a terrible name. Honestly, if I can just sidebar into this, I have always, and I mean always, hated the name of oyako. Why would you call it oyakodon? It is just such a weird thing. Like, It just, it paints such a picture. I wish sometimes that I had never learned Japanese to the point where I could understand that's what it meant. Because now it's become impossible for me to eat. I'm sorry if I've ruined it for you, but it is still a really good food. Katsudon and oyakodon are absolutely spectacular. But there's one more thing that a lot of people really, really overlook very commonly when they come to Japan. And I highly recommend that you take it seriously. You do not overlook it. You do not underestimate it. And that is karaage. Karaage. The Japanese fried chicken karaage is among the best that you can have in the world. Countries all around the world have their own versions of fried chicken, and trust me, I have tried them all. I love chicken, but there is something about Japanese karaage that just blows me away. The prep work that goes into it ensures that the chicken itself is flavored and very, very juicy. The most common reaction that I get when I take a friend out for some really good karaage is, whoa, I was not expecting it to be that juicy and that soft. It is absolute, like I don't have the words. I literally do not possess the linguistic skills to describe to you just how good really good karaage can be. It's all about finding that right karaage too. It's one of those high impact foods that the first time you try it, it really catches you off guard. Like there's no way to mentally prep for what you're about to experience when you eat it. For those of you who are listening who have had it, know exactly what I'm talking about. You are among the lucky ones, and trying it, especially right here in Japan. Like I have had karaage overseas. This is actually one of the foods that truly inspired the idea for this episode, because I've had plenty of karaage at different restaurants in Canada, in the US, I've even had it in Australia, and it is just nothing like it is here in Japan. The prep work that goes into it and the end result, the care and dedication to how it's prepped, really makes a big difference. Come to think about it, I don't think I've ever spoken so passionately about chicken in my life. Also, side note, this isn't really one of the foods that you have to eat in Japan, but I would still highly recommend this one. This is kind of an impromptu ad lib food. Convenience stores, konbini, that's the word I'm looking for. They have these salad chickens that are just a chicken breast in a bag. And the really good ones are the Family Mart smoked chicken. It's basically just a chicken breast in a bag. It's got a smoked flavor to it. It's somewhere around 200 yen. Very high in protein, low in calories. Just absolutely, absolutely delicious. If you have a chance to try those out, I recommend it. It's not a must, but if you're looking for a healthy food with low in calories, high in protein on a budget, that right there, the convenience store chicken breasts. There it is. So with all the chicken talk being done, I'm going to set all that aside, and we're going to get into a very, how can I put this, seasonal, let's call it seasonal food. Really, really seasonal option is oden. Now, oden is another one that can be a little challenging to describe, but there are entire restaurants where you can purchase oden, as well as pretty much every convenience store across the country will have oden available. And in Japanese, it's known as a nabemono, which is like a nabe meal. Now, more often than not, these consist of all kinds of different stuff, like big slices of daikon radish or boiled eggs. There's processed fish cakes. There's a whole variety. Some of them are tied together to look like little bags. Some of them are cut to look like tubes. There's honestly a great variety of things you can try, and this definitely something for everyone. But you can buy these from a convenience store, usually only in the colder months of the year. You'll go up to the front counter, and they'll have little bowls or cup-looking things up at the front, you get it. And some of the convenience stores will have the staff fill it up for you, and some of them you can grab it yourself and fill it up. But these are just spectacular. They're nice. They can be a little challenging to eat if you're eating them for the first time. They are comparatively fairly large in size in comparison to a lot of Japanese foods, but it is one of those experiences. This one, more than being about the food itself, it's really about the experience of Japan during the colder seasons and this being synonymous with it. So if you come to Japan in the late fall or the winter or early spring, I highly recommend grabbing yourself a small meal of oden. You can just grab a couple pieces from a convenience store and get it for as low as 300, maybe 500 yen. Now, this one kind of got me thinking when I was looking over some of my favorite foods, and it reminded me of driving down the road back in Kitchener with a Japanese friend in my car, and him and I were talking. I believe his name was Yasu. And Yasu and I talked about what we had for breakfast that day. I think mine was a fairly standard, I don't know, maybe a bowl of cereal or eggs and bacon or something, just something very, very standardly North American in that sense. And he said, I had a really standard breakfast as well. I had TKG. And I was like, What is TKG? And he gets this big smile on his face and he's like, this is really like a Japanese one. And I was like, well, what is it? And he's like, TKG is a tamago kake gohan. And this, to a lot of Westerners, the first time I ever did something like this back in Canada, everyone's like, oh, dude, you're gonna die. What are you doing? Because tamago kake gohan is a bowl of white rice with a raw egg broken on top of it, just a touch of soy sauce or maybe a pinch of salt, and you are good to go. A raw egg on a bowl of rice. Now, to a lot of people, that does not sound very appealing. In fact, you'd be like, where would I even get something like that? Well, a lot of these restaurants that have the beef bowls will serve stuff like this, and you can get it in the morning for breakfast. You can get it afternoon, evening. All you got to do is go to a beef bowl restaurant. You can get a raw egg or even a half boiled egg, and you can get yourself a bowl of rice, and boom, there you go. If you get one of the ones that has the meat on the side, then you can do that as well. But it became something that I actually started to fall in love with. You usually break the egg, you mix it up, and then you pour it over the rice. And again, it's one of those ones that if you're already sitting here going, nope, 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 there's nothing I can say about the flavor that's going to convince you to do it, or the texture for that matter. But if you're one of the ones who's sitting there going, you know, I might want to try that, all I can say is that if you are in a country where you cannot guarantee the freshness of your eggs, be aware that raw eggs can be a dangerous food if not handled properly. But in Japan, more often than not, the eggs that they use for this are very, very fresh. In fact, in my entire time in Japan, I have yet to hear of someone getting food poisoning from this. In fact, very interestingly, I recently decided to test my luck with a North American style restaurant here in Japan and ask them if I could do takeout, which is something that you typically don't do, but I had that vibe off of them. And along with it, they brought me out a paper that says, as of the moment of accepting this container, along with it, you accept full responsibility for the contents of the food, and we at this point are hands off. We cannot guarantee the quality of food or that you will not receive food poisoning from this. And it was like a little, it looked like a little contract. I absolutely could not believe it. I was so surprised to see it. Mind you, in all my time here, I've also never asked for a takeout container. So learning experiences to be had right there. So TKG is another one of those ones that if you're interested, I highly recommend you try it. If you're not, well, at least now you know it exists. And the next time that you hear the words TKG in one of my good morning live streams as I walk through Tokyo, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And since we are talking about traditional foods, foods that, like, you think Japan, you think this food. There's a tiny one. There's one that's deeply hidden within the culture that most people never have the chance to hear about unless they were raised in Japan or unless they happen to stumble across it. And that's one that really, really blows my mind. So years ago, many years ago, I came across the Dagashi Bar in Ebisu for the first time. If you're listening to this and you have no idea what I'm talking about, the Dagashi Bar is a bar that has all you can eat Japanese penny candies and sweets. It is in Ebisu. I think I did a video on it, probably shortly after starting my channel, like 6 months or something in. Sharla and I, a good friend, went out to this place, and I think you pay something like 500 yen to get in, and then you can order one or two drinks or whatever each. Your food, all of that is optional. And along with that 500 yen entrance fee, there is all the penny candy that you can eat. You obviously cannot take it home with you, but while you are there, you're free to pick out on as much as you want. Now, coming across this menu for the very first time, I wanted to see what kind of things they had. And they had interesting little things like chicken ramen and stuff like that. And then I came across this thing called agepan. And the only way that I could describe this agepan is like a donut or a cruller or something. I don't even know how I can... No, not like a cruller. More just like... What kind of donut would that be? Just like a simple, normal, oval donut. Great, good description. Or it literally just looks like a tiny little loaf of bread covered in sugar. Like a tiny little, I'd say maybe 15 centimeter long, 5 centimeter wide. It looks like a mini baguette that's very soft, like a donut, just covered in sugar. And I was with a Japanese friend at the time, and I said to him, like, well, what is this? And he said, well, this is the food of my childhood. And I said, what, the food of your childhood? That very, very descriptive. What is it? And he said, well, it's agepan. And agepan is typically a snack that we would get for our school lunches. And this was mind-blowing to me because he had also recently taught me that a lot of Japanese schools prepare incredible meals for the children of those schools. In fact, they have entire kitchens, nutritional experts on staff at the school to ensure that the kids are getting healthy and balanced meals. It is quite incredible. And yet, he's telling me that at school, they have these deep-fried bread covered in sugar. And that's basically what it is. Age means fried, and pan means bread. So it is fried bread, just basically covered in sugar. And these, again, are kind of like a cultural experience that gives you the opportunity to have a window or at least a little peek into a world that you may not have had the opportunity to experience. The world of Japanese childhood. And it's actually one of the reasons why I have fallen in love with dagashi so much over the years, because with each dagashi that I have tried, along with it has come some kind of memory from a friend. Almost every single time that I originally went to a dagashi or penny candy shop, a Japanese friend would pick out their personal favorite dagashi and share the memory of their childhood with me. And it reminds me of a book that I read in elementary school called The Giver, where society's elders passed memories down to the younger generation. And although none of these are my memories, I have this small collection inside of me of these experiences of different friends. Sometimes it's the exact same snack from a different angle, or sometimes they're like, the first time I had this, my mother had given me a 10 yen coin and told me I could get anything at the store. This one caught my eye. I fell in love with the flavor and it became my favorite snack all throughout my childhood. Or other times it would be, I went through a lot of dagashi before I found this one, and at first I didn't really like it, but over the years, and et cetera, et cetera. All these different little stories. I have one friend who liked the big katsu so much, the same one that I love, that every single time they got any coins whatsoever, it would be put aside just so that they could buy big cuts almost in bulk. And it kind of takes you back to your own childhood, and you want to be able to take them back home and be like, hey, there was this candy. For me personally, when I was young, it was about the Swedish berries. There was an apartment nearby where I lived, and inside that apartment, there was a small convenience store only for the residents of that apartment. But as you know, it's not impossible to get into an apartment that you don't live at. You just really have to wait at the door long enough. And if you're like 7 years old, no one bats an eye. And so at the time, this convenience store had these little tiny Swedish berries, each for, I think, 1 cent each. It's just penny candies. And the first time I ever got like 30, 40 cents, I was like, oh my Lord, I can go and buy 40 berries. This is so exciting. And the older I got, the more I wanted. And I'll never forget that by the time I was in my early teens, maybe, you know, 12, 13, 14, around there, I would go in with like $2, $3 and I'd be like, I want 300 berries. And the staff would look at me and go, Are you serious? Really, you want me to sit here and count out 300 berries? And me being the kid I was, not even realizing how much of a pain in the butt it is to count out 200 to 300 of something, would just be like, yep, please, and thank you so much. And I'd walk home with this little brown paper bag filled with berries. And I love sharing. Anytime that I can bring back something like Swedish berries or Sour Patch Kids to Japan, I love sharing it with my Japanese friends and sharing that story along with it. Unfortunately, the texture is a little too chewy and sticky for a lot of Japanese people. So they're like, oh my God, what is this? It's sticking to my teeth. This is absolutely terrible. But I like them. To this day, I like them. I really miss Swedish berries. I probably shouldn't have gotten into this story, because now I'm sitting here and all I want in the entire world is Swedish berries. I miscalculated that one pretty bad. So we're going to get into the last one, because even if I want this last one, I can have it, but I probably won't, because this one again is for the experience more than anything else, and it's probably not one that you're expecting. You see, Japan has a history of making things its own. For example, the basic shape for the Japanese kimono existed long before the Japanese took it on as their own, and they have turned it into something quintessentially Japanese and beautiful. And I could go on with examples just like this one forever, but there's one example of this that stands out in food. And at the same time, has the world kind of divided, including myself. You see, I have a very deep love-hate relationship with Japanese pizza. That's right, Japanese pizza of all things. If you've never seen an image of Japanese pizza online, if you only look up one thing from this podcast episode today, I would highly recommend it be that. Japanese pizza is, in a word, gorgeous. It really is. It's quite extravagant, is I think another word that I would use. It was almost overdone. They will have pizza with sausage and cheese and garlic sticking right out of the crust, covered in corn and squid and just doused in a beautiful pattern, fractal pattern mayonnaise, and covered in pepper and all of these things that A, you may not expect to see on pizza, and even if you did, you would not expect them to all be mixed together. And there's something about the dough. There's something they do with the dough of Japanese pizza. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if they put something like soy sauce in it, because it seems like they add that to a lot more than you might think. I had picked up a bag of Cheetos in Japan once and was reading through the ingredients label because it just felt so different. Something about it just didn't taste like Cheetos. And a friend and I cracked up as like the third or fourth ingredient on the label of these Cheetos was soy sauce. But there is something different, something very soft and almost mochi-esque or chewy about the way they approach the crust of the pizza as well. It is a very different item. Now, I have a love for pizza as itself. There are a couple foods in life that I feel should be cheap, dirty, and easy, and pizza is one of those. Tacos is another. You could give me the best taco in the world and tell me it's $10, and I'd be, no, thank you, because that's not what tacos are to me. I know I've definitely gotten into this talk before, so we're gonna sidestep that whole sidebar and get back to the fact that Japanese pizza is truly an item of its own. In the exact same way that Chicago deep dish pizza is, while still technically pizza, an item all of its own, so is Japanese pizza. And it's one of those things that I feel like everybody should go out of their way to experience while they're here. Whether you are in a hostel or a hotel, take the time, make the effort to order a Japanese pizza from a place like Pizza La. You can get them at Domino's and Pizza Hut and everything like that, but going with a Japanese shop like Pizza La is just really gives you kind of that, the feel, the experience. A lot of this being predicated on you being able to make the order in Japanese as well, but also if you are at a hostel or a hotel, you may even be able to get the staff to help you out placing an order, and it is very much worth it. You're either going to be on the side of loving it and you'll be sad that you probably can't get it when you get back home, or you'll be on the side of, well, this isn't pizza. But again, it's just one of those experiences that I feel like you have to have. And one of the things that I really love about it is you can order Japanese pizzas that are divided into four or even more sections sometimes, that kind of gives you a sampling of different types of pizzas. So they'll build four different pizzas right onto one pie, and it is, you know, I knew this was going to happen, which is why I saved this one to the very end of the list. I think I'm going to end up ordering pizza tonight along with this. And this list here, I'd really like to call this list number one, because there is no shortage whatsoever of Japanese foods. This hasn't even begun to scratch the surface of my list, but I knew we'd be sidebarring heavy today with little stories, backgrounds, places that you can get them and everything. So I kind of wanted to just keep the list compact, and it's something that hopefully you can enjoy. But for the most part, that is our episode for today, guys. I really enjoyed putting this one together. If you have any questions or you would like a second part to this coming up anytime in the near future, I heavily encourage you to hit me up over Instagram or Twitter. I'm fairly active on both of those platforms. I hope the rest of your day is absolutely beautiful. Have some water, take a stretch, enjoy your day, and you guys know I will talk to you again real soon.